The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
There's two things happening here tonight, all at the same time. We have this class of the body and mind, the weekly class with a 5-week series, and I think the flyer was mistaken about it not happening tonight, but it is happening tonight. So, and we're also having a week-long daily life practice retreat this week, and so I think probably about 20 or so people in here, maybe even 25, are participating in that as well. And so the topic that I'm going to talk about tonight will be relevant for both. And it will follow the series that I started last week on the body and mind. And so I just like to start by recapping a little bit of what I talked about last week and give you a sense of the overview of this five week series and what it's about. In my own meditation practice, I found that discovering and beginning to understand what the mind was about was a little bit odd at first. I mean, I knew certain things happened in the mind. I knew there were emotions. I knew there were thoughts. But you know, just kind of the whole range of activities that happen in the mind, it was just kind of mysterious to me. And what I began discovering is as I got really familiar with the body, what the body is, then the mind began to come into relief. Because there's basically two things happening in our experience. There's bodily processes and mental processes. And so the more we get clear about what aspects of our experience are body, the more we can start to clarify and understand what these mental processes are. So that's kind of the reason I decided to do this series, to help people begin to see all the different threads of mental processes and how they interrelate with the body. So last week I focused pretty much on the body, on bodily experience and feeling the body itself. And the framework I used for that was exploring the elemental nature of our physical experience. In the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha's discourse on the four foundations of mindfulness, where the first aspect, the first of those four foundations, is the foundation of attending to the body with mindfulness. He has a section of that talks about this elemental nature of experience. He talks about the elements of earth, air, fire, and water as being present in our bodily experience, and that we can contact those experiences directly with our mindfulness. And so just as a brief review, the aspect of the earth element is the sensations that correspond to things like heaviness, hardness, density, weight, that kind of experience. The aspects of earth, you know, when you think of earth, it's got those qualities of hardness, and actually the opposite quality of softness, that's also earth element. The weight, the density, just you can kind of get a sense of the feeling of the body, just the aspect of just the weight of the body. That's earth element. We can experience that directly in our experience. We experience the hardness of our teeth, the hardness of our nails. We can experience the hardness of our bones through the pressure of our feet on the floor and our butt on the chair or cushion. So that's earth. We're contacting earth by contacting those sensations. And then air element is around movement, vibration, tingling, pulsing, any sensation that has a quality of movement to it is an expression of the air element. Then the fire element is the element of temperature, so heat, coolness, everything along that range. And the water element is the element of fluidity, of liquidity, of flowing, cohesion. So we can experience these through sensations. And I generally, in my own experience, when I'm orienting my attention in this way, I go for the words, the language that represents the experience that I'm feeling. I mean, for me, experiencing vibration, tingling, pulsing, that's a more natural word to use than I'm experiencing air. So those are the words that I think it's helpful to kind of get familiar with. And I like to almost think of the sensations that are associated with these elements as being the language of the physical body. Tightness, tension, pressure, pulling, burning, stabbing, aching. All of those are aspects of just the elemental nature of our experience. So I don't particularly try to map it back and think, okay, pressure, that's air. Okay, air. That's too much thinking. Just moving into what's the actual experience. But it can be helpful to kind of get a sense of the language of this elemental nature of experience. At least I found it helpful to begin to be able to distinguish my experience through this language. So the body kind of speaks to us in this language. And we often, in experiencing our body, are experiencing through concept. So we think that we experience something like hand. We think we're experiencing hand or shoulder or knee. But what we're actually experiencing is sharpness or pressure or vibration or coolness. And then in our mind, it gets translated into hand. So we kind of miss. We're not so conscious of the language that the body is speaking to us in, and this begins to open us up to a realm of sensitivity in our bodies. And we begin to see that the body is kind of like this very sensitive antenna. It's providing us all kinds of information about our environment through this elemental language. So it's a very helpful tool to add to our mindfulness toolkit to begin to get really familiar with this elemental experience. So one of the ways that this begins to help us to distinguish between mind and body is that we can kind of begin to see that the body is kind of it's got some receptor quality to it through the nervous system, but the body itself is not conscious in the same way that our minds are conscious. In fact, the consciousness, that kind of distributed consciousness of the body, is considered part of mind in the Buddhist framework. So the kind of the feeling through our body, that's actually created in the mind. And neuroscientists agree with that, actually. So we begin to, through exploring this elemental language, we begin to see that there's a distinction between our body and our mind. There's a place in the commentaries of this meditation instruction that the Buddha gave in the Satipatthana Sutta. One commentary talks about a way to use this practice of reflecting on the elements by actually consciously using thought, by reflecting, for instance, and I'll read this section to you. I thought it was interesting. I hadn't read this part before. So it suggests kind of going through the various aspects of your body, paying attention to the hair, the teeth, the skin, the nails, and just kind of almost pulling the body apart into these various aspects, but looking at those various aspects of the body, the heart, the lungs, the saliva, the tongue, all of it as through this lens of this elemental exploration. And in each place it says, well, check out, you know, what is the elemental quality of that thing? And then it points out that that element is not conscious. And so I'll read this to you. It says, this is just one aspect. So the contemplation of teeth. Teeth grow in the jaw bones. Just as when posts are placed by builders in stone sockets and fastened with some kind of cement, the sockets do not know posts are placed in us, nor do the posts know we are placed in sockets. So too, the jaw bones do not know teeth grow in us, nor do the teeth know we grow in jaw bones. These things are devoid of mutual concern and reviewing. So what are called teeth are a particular component of this body without thought, indeterminate, void, not a living being, just earth element. So this reflection on the elemental nature of experience is intended to begin to help us distinguish body from mind. That's kind of the point of this exploration. So in looking at our mental experience, I'd like to move into that area. So this familiarity with our body, this exploration of the physical, when we begin to understand the elemental nature of experience, we begin to see that other aspects, things that are not this elemental experience, may be in the realm of the mental. And there's a whole bunch of things like this that we may not necessarily recognize as mental until we begin to discern, okay, what is the actual physical experience? It's this elemental experience, a vibration, tingling, pulsing. And then we begin to discern that the concept of hand is something in our minds. We begin to discern that feeling of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral is something that happens in our mind. So there's a whole range of experiences that kind of will come out of our physical world often. And I'm going to, over the weeks, go through a variety of those and explore how understanding the body will help us to tease apart all these just various threads of mental experience. So tonight I'd really like to explore the relationship between the mind and the body in the realm of emotion and reactivity. So, emotions are created by a lot of different things. So I'm going to explore it this evening primarily in terms of the inner relationship between the mind and the body. And so I may leave out some parts. So just to begin, what I'd like to explore is how emotions might come about from our body. How might this happen? I mean, our body has these sensations, and these sensations of our body tend to have this quality, this mental quality, actually, and I'm going to talk more about the mental quality of feeling next week, the quality of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. But I'm just going to touch on it briefly here because it's kind of a key piece in terms of where emotions are created from. So there's the body, and then there's a sense that we have that certain of these elemental experiences are pleasant, certain of them are unpleasant, and certain of them are kind of neutral. And that's actually a mental experience, but I'll go into that more next week. So there's the body, and then there's this experience of the pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. And often out of that, there's some kind of reactivity that gets born. You know, when things are unpleasant, We don't like it. We want to get rid of it. And aversion and anger and hostility and frustration and irritation, annoyance, many emotions are kind of born out of that experience when we have something unpleasant happening in our physical experience. We get frustrated, we get annoyed, we get angry. Something pleasant happens, we like it, we want it. We want to hold on to it, we want to have it and keep it. And possessiveness and greed and vanity and pride can grow out of this side of things. You know, we like the way that we look physically. Pride might appear. Or maybe we don't like the way we look physically, and disgust appears in our minds. And out of neutral experience, we can just kind of space out and not connect and get bored or dull or sleepy or restless. So from our physical experience, you know, based on what our physical experience is, there may be some of this reactivity coming. Now, I think most of you understand that emotions are mental, that they have a physical a component, but there's a large aspect of that it happens in our mind, that a lot of it is going on in our minds. So the the physical experience of an emotion and the mental part of an emotion, because they're both there. I mean, there may be kind of a reactivity that happens out of, you know, something pleasant happens, and then there's emotion that's born, and then the emotion itself feeds back to the body and creates body sensation also. So there's this kind of two-way cycle between the two. So the physical experience and the mental experience are different things, and so I'd like to explore that and tease that apart a little bit. So for example, you might have a physical experience such as an accident of some kind where you injure yourself. You fall down and bruise your knee or something like that. So there's the pain in the body from that. And then there's often, you know, it's not just simply notice that, oh, I fell down. It's like, oh, boy, do I feel stupid. And who was looking? And so a mental chain of events follows off of that experience. So the linkage between the mind and the body can be seen through exploring what is the body and what is the mind. So there's the falling down, the hitting of the body, the bruising, the pain of the physical sensation, and then there's the mental thoughts about it, there's the emotions about it, the reactivity about it. And they're related. There's a cause and effect relationship between them. And the seeing of the cause and effect relationship between mind and body is very helpful in beginning to tease apart the identifications that we have around our body and our mind. That as we see the body and mind processes, we see that things in the body impact our minds and things in the mind impact our body. It's just these processes that go back and forth. And we start to see how this reactivity is created. And we see that this reactivity is actually, we begin to see this reactivity is a process of our minds. So this example of falling down, you know, you could fall down and hit your knee and not necessarily have that pattern of self-denigration come into your minds. It might just be, oh, I fell down. No big deal. I'll get up and take care of it, see if there's anything I need to do about it. So the reactivity, the emotional reactivity, is kind of constructed in our minds. It's not necessary. It's kind of optional, in a way. And so beginning to distinguish the body and the mind, we can begin to see what are the processes of our mind. Things that are processes in our minds there's actually a little bit of room of navigation of making some changes. You know, we can't do much about our body in terms of, you know, I mean, we can diet or we can exercise and that kind of thing. We can make changes to our body in that way. But, you know, if we fall down and bruise our knee, you know, we can't just through an act of will say, bruise, be gone. But we can, through a practice, learn how to not react. So when things are going on in our mind, there's some room for navigation and choice. That we have a choice about, do I react to this with aversion and hostility and frustration, or do I react to it with compassion and kindness? So seeing this link between mind and body, we begin to see there's a little bit of room for choice. And when things are happening in our minds, that's where the choice can happen. That's where the choice takes place, is in our minds. So there's this connection between mind and body is very tight. It's very integrated. And sometimes, surprisingly, there are things that feel like their body. You would swear it was body experience, and yet it's a mental experience. And I'll give you an example of this from my own life. I had a frozen shoulder a couple of years ago. It was very painful. You know, I could barely move it. And what I found is it's kind of like the whole body felt like it was inflamed in a way. The shoulder was clearly where there was the damage, but the whole body just felt like it was irritated, like it was just raw. The whole body had that quality of feeling raw, I thought that it was, you know, maybe some kind of physical response through the system. You know, I thought it was physical. That, you know, because of this injury, that there was some kind of chemical that was flowing around through the whole system, kind of making it feel this way. So I thought of it as a body thing. But I just kept noticing, you know, I was really attentive to my experience around the frozen shoulder and where there was reactivity and how the pain felt and where, you know, I was just very attentive. And at one point in this observation, and I can't even tell you how it happened, but at one point there was a little bit of mental gripping that let go around this pain. A little bit of, I could feel it. It was just like a little releasing of that mental aversion to the pain. And in that moment, the whole body, the kind of raw feeling of the body vanished instantly. And I realized in that moment, it came back pretty quickly actually, because it was such, there's such a almost like this bracing feeling, you know, a kind of a sense of protect the body. So it came back, and then the rawness came back. But I saw in that moment that it actually was a mental bracing and not a physical thing. So it's kind of surprising to me to really see just how tightly intertwined they are and how we can confuse, how easy it is to confuse a mental process with a physical process. So this kind of exploration, for me, I wouldn't have known that whole body feeling, that whole body inflammation was a mental process if I hadn't just been kind of hanging out and noticing with mindfulness the mental responses, the physical experiences, and then just seeing suddenly there was this little mental relaxation, and suddenly the whole body had a different feeling to it. So this kind of exploration can be very helpful for us to distinguish what's mental and what's physical. This, particularly around pain, it seems to me, there's a lot of pain, a lot of what we call pain. You know, there's the physical unpleasant experience that feels like burning, stabbing, pulling, twisting, aching, all of that. And then there's the mental response to it. And what I've seen in my own experience is that the vast majority of what we call pain is actually in our minds. And that when that mental resistance to the physical experience goes away. Physical sensations don't go away. The physical sensations of burning, pulling, stabbing, twisting, aching, they stay. But the relation to them shifts to such an extent that it no longer feels like pain. It feels like unpleasant sensation. So there's a very tight link between the mind and the body around physical experience. And so just beginning to notice that there's some physical, mental processes that can very quickly impact the body. And then with respect to emotions, you know, I was just talking about how emotions can be born out of a reactivity to physical experience. It's a very common way for emotions to come into play. And then those emotions then can feed back into the body. So emotions also produce physical experiences. So for instance, the experience of fear, the mental experience of fear, can often be felt as through this aspect of the body, a feeling of quivering or fluttering, a contraction in the throat, a sense of tightening, perhaps in the body, a kind of a bracing, if we're afraid of something. So there can the mind, the mental state of fear, feeds into the body and produces physical instructions, physical sensations. So it's helpful to distinguish the physical sensations of the emotion from the emotion itself. So for instance, you can notice that with fear, there's the state of fear, and you can notice that fear, and you can also notice quivering, tension, tightness, pulling. So if you turn, and it's very helpful actually in noticing an emotion, to begin to notice the impact that it has on the body, really helpful. It takes us out of the mental spinning around the emotion and allows us to just contact here and now what's happening in the bodies. Now there's this interesting, I don't know if I've mentioned this in this class before, but it's a good one to restate if I have, so I'll say it again. There's an understanding about how the emotions function in our minds and in our bodies from the perspective of the brain and neuroscience and hormones. And that is that when an emotion comes into our minds, when something happens that brings an emotion into our minds, there's a flood of hormones through our bodies. And assuming that, there's just that one flood of hormones, that impact of the emotion on the body lasts about 90 seconds. But what we do is we keep kind of with our thoughts, we keep poking at that emotion, kind of churning it up. And so the hormones keep getting released over and over and over again. And so it feels like it lasts a long time. It can last a long time if we're caught in the world of the thoughts around the emotion. And so in paying attention to emotions, it's really helpful to come into the body and take ourselves out of that mental realm to give it a chance to just have that hormone flush through the body and release. So coming into the body, we can just hang out with the feelings, hang out with vibration, tension, tightness, pulling, fluttering. And that gives it a chance to just take its 90 seconds and move through. Now, mostly what happens is you're noticing the body for a little while, and then there'll be a thought that comes in, and then, oh, there's another flush of hormones through the body. You just get to, do it again. But over time, we gain skill in this exploration of the body. We gain skill in being able to meet the body and just hang out in that realm. And we do find that they pass. They can pass quite quickly when we just attend with mindfulness to the body. Really helpful if you're doing this kind of exploration of observing the physical sensation of an emotion. So say there's fear, you know, turning the attention to the body, changing the recognition of what's happening to the elemental language, as opposed to continuing to acknowledge it as the fear. I mean, that there's such a tight coupling between the mind and body that we feel the feeling of the body as fear. And yet we can come into the elemental nature and feel it more as vibration and tingling and pulsing. Why do we need to do this? I mean, it maybe sounds like a fine kind of point, but I found in my own experience, and I'll give an example of this, that it really serves to clarify what's happening if you connect to the physical experience. So, for example, on one retreat, I was experiencing, I was waiting for an interview, and it was a long retreat, and we had interviews about every 3 days. So I hadn't spoken much in 3 days, and pretty much every time I went for an interview, I got anxious. So there was a feeling of anxiety that came up, you know, what am I going to say? Is it going to look good? Am I going to look good? You know, so all of this kind of self stuff came up, and the feeling of anxiety of, you know, how am I going to present me? You know, how am I going to present 3 days of experience in 10 minutes to this teacher? So there was the feeling of anxiety would commonly come up when I went for an interview. And this one particular day I went for the interview, and I was feeling a lot of this quivering in the body waiting for the interview. And, you know, having been in this situation a lot, I just like, okay, well, anxiety. So this is anxiety. I'll just watch this anxiety. And I was using a labeling, a mental labeling, and I was feeling the quivering a little bit, but I was naming it as anxiety, anxiety, anxiety. And the interview went on for quite a long time before me, so I got to watch this for a really long time. And after a while, it kind of began to surprise me because it didn't change much. And by this point in the retreat, I had gotten to the place where when I brought my mindfulness to something, it often began to shift and change because there wasn't too much reactivity around the mindfulness. I could just meet whatever was happening. And so I got curious about why it wasn't changing, what was going on. And I dropped a little bit more carefully into the body and began really contacting the physical sensations of the quivering. And what kind of rapidly became apparent to me was that there were these rapid kind of pulsing sensations through the body. The quivering kind of had this rising kind of energy. And that it was not anxiety, but it was rapture. And I had mistaken it to be anxiety because of the context of the situation I was in. Waiting for the interview, commonplace for me to feel anxiety. The sensations were very similar to anxiety, a quivering kind of sensation, very similar to what I'd feel in anxiety. And so it fooled me. And because, you know, when I was noting anxiety or noticing it as anxiety, I was basically missing it. You know, I wasn't really paying attention to what was happening. I was paying attention to what I thought was happening. And when I actually connected to the experience, not only did it become clear what was happening, but it rapidly moved through. It got kind of intense for a little while, but then it passed through. So really helpful to not necessarily make assumptions. You know, when you're feeling some experience in your body, there may be a kind of idea that we have about it. You know, pressure and tightness around the heart means I'm sad or depressed. Maybe, maybe not. Be willing to explore just that feeling and see what's actually there. I found often in my experience, actually, that there's a physical experience that happens. You know, our bodies can have habits. Our bodies can have habits and go into habits of familiar states, familiar body states, whether or not there's an emotion there. If you've got a habit of the body having a contraction around the heart because of a history of a particular emotion, sometimes the body can just go into that. And what I've seen happening in my own experience is that, you know, the body will go into some pattern, and then it'll be like, oh, I'm feeling all this tightness and tension around my head. I must be working too hard. I must be over-efforting. And at one point on retreat, it's like, well, no, it's just tightness and tension around the head. There's not any over-efforting going on here. But I saw at times this tendency to feeling a feeling in the body, to kind of scan the environment, trying to figure out, okay, this feeling means I'm sad or lonely. What am I sad or lonely about? When it may just be that there's just this feeling in the body. But we can rapidly construct an emotion out of it. So a little bit more subtle than the emotional realm is it's in the same area of kind of reactivity, but it's kind of a quieter version of it, is liking and not liking. That when we meet experience, there's almost always some sense of, I like this, I don't like that, I like this, I don't like that. It's like we go through our day orienting based on what we like and what we don't like. And this happens at a kind of a level that we don't notice all the time, but we can open up to this and begin to notice, oh, I like that pattern of light. Oh, I don't like that color of carpet. You know, it's just like everywhere. We're judging almost everything based on what we like and what we don't like. And as we can begin to see this, we actually begin to see the kind of lower level of that reactivity. You know, that mostly that reactivity comes out of liking something and wanting it, or not liking something and wanting to get rid of it. So there's this kind of stepwise progression from the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral to liking, wanting, not liking, not wanting, to full-blown emotional reactivity. And so we can begin to key into this also mental aspect of liking and not liking as a way to begin to kind of avert perhaps a full-blown emotional attack. Just, oh yeah, I like that, I don't like that. When we can be mindful of the liking and not liking, it can just stay at that level of liking and not liking. We don't actually have to react to things we like and we don't like. We can simply, you know, oh yeah, that's nice, I like that. But it doesn't have to go much further. Or, oh, I don't like that, but yeah, it's okay that it's there. You know, it's not particularly a problem. So, one last piece I'll go into, and then I'll open it up for some questions. Is in beginning to distinguish and beginning to see that there's bodily processes and the mental realm of reactivity, particularly around emotions, it's really interesting to start to look at what are we actually reacting to? Is it actually the body sensations that we're reacting to? Now, reactivity, and I'll just say this, you know, so I don't leave a gaping hole here. We can react to mental experience. You know, it's like physical experience isn't the only thing we react to. We definitely react to mental experience. We if we feel anger, we might then start judging ourselves because we're angry, and then get frustrated at ourselves because we're judging ourselves, and we, you know, end up in this cycle of, you know, reactivity to reactivity to reactivity. But, you know, kind of just in talking about body and mind as being a place to begin to explore teasing these apart, if we think we're reacting to something physical, it's really interesting to actually look and see, well, is it actually the physical thing that I am reacting to? So, for instance, you know, we have an itch. Itches can drive us nuts. especially in meditation when we're, you know, instructed to not move. So this is a good place to explore them. So there's an itch in your body, and there's this incredible sense of, you know, restlessness in the mind around that. And it feels like it's the itch that's causing that. You know, it feels like it's because of that itch. If that itch weren't there, I wouldn't be feeling that. Obviously, it's the itch that is causing this reactivity. But when we look a little more closely at just the body sensations, when we can just meet the sensation of an itch, what I've found is it basically is a very strong, generally slightly unpleasant experience that has a kind of an on-off, on-off, on-off quality in one spot. It's like if you come down and just can find the place of that itch, where it is, it's like zzzz, zzzz, it's like a little buzz, zzzz, zzzz, and it comes and goes. It's on-off, on-off, on-off. And, you know, it's just that. What we react to is the idea, especially in meditation, for instance, you know, if we're not moving, we react to the idea that we're not supposed to move. We react to the thought that, or the belief that, you know, that I need to get rid of this, I need to have some control over this experience. So there's a mental thing that's happening, actually. In most of our reactivity to physical experience, there's usually some mental phenomenon going on, often some kind of a belief. Some kind of belief like, I need to have control, or control is my biggie. That's the one that I go to. So you know, there's we all have our own favorite beliefs. I don't have control, or I need to have control, or I'm a powerful person, or I'm a vulnerable person, or I'm a miserable person, or I'm a happy person. There's some kind of an underlying belief that we have that perhaps this physical experience is somehow challenging, and we react to that. So the exploration of beliefs is a very interesting world, territory to move into. And that's all in the realm of mental experience. And I hope that I can talk more about beliefs as the course goes on, because I think it's a very powerful place that they're kind of hidden from us, our beliefs. They're so pervasive and so diffuse in a way that they don't often pop up clearly in our minds as a thought or a belief. It's just like we're operating out of them. It's just the air we're breathing. So they're not so clear to us sometimes. So, but as we explore, and actually I've heard from people during this week in this daily life practice retreat, several of you have been starting to see, oh, I see there's a belief here. And the whole chain of reactivity is coming out of that belief. It's not really coming out of the thing that I'm seeing or the thing that I'm feeling. It's because this belief is being challenged, or it's because this belief is somehow trying to express itself. You know, the belief is like, okay, so if I have a sense of I know how to do things, I know how to accomplish things, so that's a kind of a belief that's operating. Now, it may be true, you know, that I have that capacity to do things and accomplish things. So I'm not saying that we have to get rid of that capacity, But the fact that that's a belief, and that there may be it's the belief and a kind of an identification about that belief. So I have this capacity to do things well, and an identification around that sure feels good to be able to do things and do things well. And you know, so there's a kind of a puffing up around that. And then somebody comes along and says, you know, you did a really bad job on that thing. That belief is challenged. And, you know, there may be a sense of, there could be a sense of reactivity to that of, oh, I'm a failure. Or there could be a sense of, well, you're wrong. I did that right. I mean, so the belief can either, you know, can lead to different reactions depending on what our situation is. You know, maybe depending on the respect of the person who's talking to us, or all kinds of situations can impact that. So the, you know, beliefs are really interesting to start to explore. And a lot of our reactivity is kind of born out of that terrain of belief. So I want to open it up for some questions or thoughts or comments or just anything that's come up for you. Yeah.
One of the things you said tonight just really shocked me. And it was the idea that of relating to emotions conceptually and the possibility that we really don't know what we're experiencing, which is really good news if you really don't like what you're experiencing.
There's a lot of our experience that is conceptual. And I'll talk more about that in the coming weeks, too, the whole concept nature of the mental processes. And it is, in some ways, it is good news. I mean, the whole thing about this meant that all path of reactivity actually coming out of our own minds, it's actually great news because we have the opportunity to do something with that. We can't control the environment, but we do have an opportunity to make some choices internally. And actually begin to see, well, what's actually going on here? And the power of mindfulness is it bringing us into the present moment. It shows us what's actually going on here. And it's very eye-opening.
So I'm looking forward to, when I'm feeling miserable, of really looking at what's going on and finding out if that's true. Like your story about anxiety and rapture, I'm just like,
it was pretty startling. You know, the things like miserable, you know, for myself, I was really miserable. I was really miserable. And I knew I was really miserable. And that is kind of a belief. I'm a miserable person. It was kind of a belief for me. Because of that belief, my whole orientation towards the world is kind of looking through that lens of, I'm a miserable person, poor me, I'm a miserable person. And looking through that lens, I found ample proof that I was miserable. ample proof that I was miserable. There would be times when I would, you know, not be miserable. But that pattern was so strong that even when I was happy, it would be something like, well, I'm happy now, but I know what I really am is miserable. So, you know, with a pattern that's pervasive like that, something that's really, really helpful, you know, so not only exploring just the actual feelings of miserable, you know, what does it feel like? Is it really miserable? Or is it simply that there's a familiar feeling in the body that's going, oh, yeah, there's that feeling. And, oh, that means I'm miserable. You know, and then we're just going, you know, pulling ourselves into it because of this belief. One thing that's really helpful is noticing when the miserable is not there, actually consciously connecting with that. And if you see that kind of thought that, oh, yeah, well, I'm happy now, but, you know, no, that's also just the thought in the mind. You know, this practice, I did used to be a miserable person. And now I'm basically a happy person. I mean, there's some times when I'm not so happy, but, you know, they're transient. And most of the time I'm, you know, just kind of meeting experience as it comes, and it's just a nice flow of experience. And sometimes it's pleasant and sometimes it's unpleasant. And there's a lot of space around it. And this practice, I attribute that loss of the miserable identity to this practice, definitely. So I really encourage that exploration. Thank you.
So when you were talking about emotional experiences and feeling things in the body, I remembered that when my cat died last year, I was feeling grief and I had this pain in my chest, and it was the same pain that I felt when my father had died a number of years before, and I was like, oh, there it is again, but then I fell into it and I could feel that it wasn't as intense, and by sort of being with that pain, that physical experience, it helped me put, it's like, it really is just a cat. And so I could feel the grief and be with it, but it sort of put the whole experience in a different in perspective.
Yes. I think that's what a lot of this coming into the body around emotions does help us to do. So it's so helpful. I just can't stress it. And your story emphasizes that too. So thank you for sharing that. You know, there's a guided meditation. I think I'll save it for next week. I'll do it at the end of the class next week. But I'm just going to mention it because, mention the technique to you. And then we can try it next week because I don't really have time now. There's only 5 minutes left. But there's a tool that I found really helpful in exploring emotions, because sometimes emotions can be layered. You know, there's a lot going on for us. You know, if we're having some really strong situation in our lives, there may be, some of it may be, you know, anger, some of it may be resentment, some of it may be fear, some of it may be vulnerability. There's a lot that kind of comes together. And, you know, there may be some obvious piece of it, like anger is kind of the outer layer. And yet there's a lot going on. And so a way to explore the layers of an emotion is by coming into the body and doing this kind of alternation between checking into what's going on in the mind and what's going on in the body. So I'll describe this to you, and you know, some of you may not be able to come next week, so you could try this on your own. If you're feeling a strong emotion, try this for, say, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes. You can do this in your daily life, you know, if you have the time. You know, if you're, you know, find yourself at a place where you've had a meeting that's strongly impacted you, and you go back to your office and you're feeling a lot of emotion, just close your door, or if you don't have a door, you got a cubicle, you know, just turn your back to the door and just, you know, sit there for 10 minutes and try this exploration. So noticing what the obvious emotion is. What's the obvious emotion? Maybe it's anger. And then coming into the body and kind of, you can ask yourself the question, how does this anger impact the body? And notice, what are the sensations in the body that are related to the anger? Use the elemental language as you do this. Pressure, tension, heat. Feeling that rising of it. And just hang out with it for, you know, a couple minutes. Hang out with that elemental experience around the anger. Let go of the idea of anger. Just come into the bodily experience. After, say, a minute or two, check back into the mind. See what the tone of the mind is now. Often, because we've come into the body and are just with that elemental experience, there can be some kind of a shift or change. And what we may find underneath that, you know, so there's a shift or change, and we come back to the mind, and we may find there's fear. Notice that fear come back into the body, where does that fear impact the body? And just then explore that in the elemental way. Go back and check into the mind again after a few minutes. You might notice a feeling of vulnerability. How do you feel vulnerable in your body? What does that feel like? So in this way, we can kind of begin to tease through some of the layers of the complexity of emotion by using the body, coming into the body, using the feelings in the body that are related to the emotion as both a support for letting go of all of the mental agitation and thoughts around the emotion, and to, you know, honor the emotion at the same time. You know, emotions do want to be felt. There's something about emotions that are saying, pay attention to me. But our usual way of paying attention to emotions is to think about them and think about the situation that's made us feel that way so that we can try to think our way out of emotions. And that generally tends to kind of just keep them going. So this honors the emotion in that you're really meeting the emotion. You're meeting the feeling in the body. But come into the elemental experience, as I was describing around my exploration with anxiety. Come into the feeling. And then check in, kind of back and forth. You can go back and forth several times and just notice what happens. It can often help to do this in a guided way, and so I'll try it next week. We'll do a guided meditation to explore this a little bit and see what happens. So it's time to stop. So thank you for your attention, and I hope to see some of you next week.